Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Arts Place. Conservative talk from a different view. From the Casablanca studio in Golden, Colorado. Hosted by Art Carlson. At 4'6", liberals fear him. And conservatives love him. He's definitely a giant among men. Now here's your host, Art Carlson.
Hey, it's great to have you folks here. We're going to have a great show today. We have former Colorado State GOP Chairman Dick Wadhams will be on, and I'm guaranteeing you a great show today. So why don't we start this off, and let's welcome Dick Wadhams to the show.
Hey, Art, how are you doing?
I am doing super. Thanks for
joining
us, Dick. And give us a little, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the position of being the chairman.
Well, I was interested in politics at an early age and volunteered in my local Republican Party in the small county I grew up in southern Colorado, Bend County. And then after continued to do it in the college and worked on a lot of campaigns as a volunteer and ended up being asked to work full time on a campaign back in the mid 70s and that just kind of got my appetite whetted and worked for a lot of campaigns and then went to work for Senator Bill Armstrong in 1980 and was with him for 9 years in both Colorado and Washington, D.C. And then I started running campaigns pretty regularly for Hank Brown when he ran to replace Armstrong in 1990 and Terry Considine in 92 and Senator Conrad Burns in Montana in 94 and Wayne Allard in 96 and 2002 and Governor Bill Owens in 1998 and John Thune in South Dakota, and so I did all that stuff before I got elected state chairman in 2007. So I've had a lot of great experience, and I'm grateful for it.
Super. 2010 was an odd year, and you probably are expecting this question, but you've been the whipping boy for the last couple of years. And it's not like you were king and telling everybody this is what's going to happen. Give us a précis of what happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, what set all this up? It was the perfect storm that happened, mm-hmm. especially in the governor's race and the Senate race.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I mean, when you're state chairman, you expect to be the object of blame for the sun not coming up. So, you know, that's kind of goes up the territory. But 2010, as we approached that election, had tremendous opportunity for Republicans. I mean, we had an open seat an open seat for U.S. Senate because Dwayne Allard didn't run for a third term. We came into the cycle with a very weakened incumbent Democratic Governor Bill Ritter. We had a couple of congressional seats that were certainly vulnerable for the Democrats because they had voted for Obamacare and for the stimulus package the Obama administration put forward. And so we had lots of opportunities. And what I pledged as state chairman as we got into that 2010 election was that we would have a fair and open nomination process where any Republican could compete for a nomination for public office from U.S. Senator and Governor down to County Commissioner, and any Republican who chose to could participate in that process of nominating a candidate, that a group of allegedly powerful individuals were not going to sit in a room and choose candidates. And that's what we had. I mean, we had a record turnout at our caucuses. We had 70,000 people come to our caucuses, which was a record. And we continued that, something we started in 2008 with a preference poll so that we could actually judge in a concrete way how the candidates did at the caucuses. Before 2008, people might not remember that we didn't do that at precinct caucuses, but it was something that the State Central Committee and I implemented in 08. In the presidential year, we continued it in 2010 with the governor and senator races. And so it provided a lot of drama that night. We had a bigger turnout than Democrats on caucus night in 2010. And, of course, the Tea Party movement had begun in 2009 and into 2010. And there was a natural distrust by the part of a lot of Tea Party members of the party leadership. There was a misunderstanding that somehow we were sitting around selecting candidates, when, in fact, that doesn't happen. And maybe it happened 50 years ago, but it doesn't happen today. And so it started, Art, really with the exit of a very dynamic new young state senator, Josh Penry, in November of 2009, leaving us with a former congressman, Scott McGinnis, and then had Dan Mays, who had kind of emerged as a Tea Party favorite. And those two fought it out. But as we grew closer to the primary, Dan Mays beat McGinnis at the convention. Before the primary, Dan Mays got into some troubles for embellishing his resume to some extent. McGinnis ran into trouble with some plagiarism charges that he couldn't shake. And so regardless of who won that primary, was going to be in a difficult situation. Meantime, in the Senate race, we had Ken Buck.
Yeah, a whole plethora of people in the Senate
race. Yes, and Jane Norton. They fought it out. Ken won the convention. Jane didn't go on through the convention. She got on by petition. And
right.
Then Ken Buck narrowly beat her in the primary. And whereas the governor's race kind of was lost before the primary, the Senate race, actually, Ken Buck was leading going into October. He was on the verge of beating Bennett. And then Ken made some comments that caused controversy.
Yeah, we all remember those.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure do. In the meantime, the governor's race, Dan Mays kind of limped his way to the nomination. People like a lot of Tea Party groups abandoned their support of Dan Mays. As a result, Tom Tancredo became a third-party candidate, and that kind of just set that situation in motion for an easy win for Hickenlooper. But what people forget, Arthur, is down the ticket. For the first time since 1974, two statewide elected officials were unseated when Walker Stapleton beat Kerry Kennedy for treasurer and Scott Gessler beat Bernie Bushner for Secretary of State. For the
right.
first time since 1964, two members of Congress were unseated in the same election when John Salazar was unseated by Scott Tipton and Cory Gardner unseated Betsy Markey. So,
right.
And we won the Colorado House of Representatives for the first time in 8 years. And so we had two very disappointing results for the top offices, and those are the ones that, you know, people care about and think really matter, and they do. But we had tremendous success in other races, and it just proved that had we nominated a strong, young candidate for governor, that candidate, I believe, would have defeated John Hickenlooper. Had Ken Buck not made some statements that got him off track in October, he would have defeated Michael Bennett, and we would have had a clean sweep in 2010. But the criticism directed at me, you know, that's to be expected. But the only thing I would ask your people is to step back and say, really, I mean, the state party's job is to oversee a process, not to determine who the nominees are. And if they thought that somehow I could head off Dan Mays or whatever happened in that race, that's not the role of the party. The party consists of literally hundreds of thousands of registered Republicans who go to caucuses who are delegates to county and state conventions and then vote in the primary. That's the group that selects nominees, not the state chairman.
That's right. And 2010 was the year that I got in when I ran for the state house the first time, and I really got a taste of how the system really worked, and I was just amazed at what goes on. And since then, I've learned a lot. I ran for state senate, Lawson primary, and I was able to fill in for a vacancy, and unfortunately lost in a heavily Democrat district. And now I moved out here to Golden, and I'm now in a district with reapportionment now favors Republicans, and it turns out it's a targeted seat that I'm going to be running for.
Well, that's great. I'll tell you, it's you've shown a lot of tenacity in the past, and I appreciate that and admire it, and that's great that you're going to give it another shot.
Thank you. I think I bring something unique to the race where normally if there's a race between a male and female, it's usually the female that has an edge because the male can't really attack her, to where with me, I'm more on an equal footing because we're both minorities.
Yeah, good point. Very good point.
And also, if they try to attack me, it will come back to them as petty and mean, and it will damage their credibility. So I think I have an edge there, and hopefully I can convince the folks at the caucus that I'm the right one, and I hope that there's not going to be a primary this time around. But I'm getting in early, and I got my website up and talking to people in Jefferson County and getting the ball rolling.
Well,
all right, so
congratulations.
Well, thank you. Let's talk about the upcoming governor's race. We have two folks that are jumping in on the Republican side. We have your favorite, Tom Tancredo, and a possibility, Scott Gessler. What is your thoughts on that race? Do you see anybody else might jump in?
Well, it's still early. I think there will be other candidates to get in. But what I would say, Art, is this, is that, you know, it's been 10 years. It's been over 10. It's now been 11 years since Colorado Republicans won a race for United States Senate or governor. And that was back in 2002 when Bill Owens was reelected almost by acclamation. He didn't have much of an opponent that year. And Senator Allard won another tough reelection against Tom Strickland. He beat Strickland twice. I think we ought to take a look at why those two individuals won twice statewide. I mean, Owens was the first Republican governor to be elected in literally 28 years when he was elected in 98. And right. Wayne Allard, people forget that Wayne Allard, when his victory in 1996 was the first in the first one in 6 years for U.S. Senate. Hank Brown got elected in 1990, but for U.S. Senate. And so Allard and Owens, the common thread among the people who have won statewide for governor and senator is Republicans in Colorado. And those being Bill Armstrong, Hank Brown, Wayne Allard, and Bill Owens, is that they were very disciplined candidates. They didn't say dumb things. Did they make a mistake every now and then? Yeah. I mean, actually having managed a bunch of those campaigns I just mentioned, I remember that they were mistakes that we quickly were able to get ahead of and get past. But overall, they were disciplined candidates. They were candidates of substance. They could lay out a clear agenda why they were running for those offices. And they were candidates that also appealed to a broad section of Coloradans. They didn't go out of their way to alienate any Colorado voter. And as a result, they won in a state that's very competitive, like Colorado. And that's what we need in 2000, 2014, and those elections for governor and senator and on down the ticket, and particularly governor and senator. And so as Republicans start looking at the candidates and they prepare to go to the precinct caucuses in February now, I think they really need to take a hard look at the candidates who are before them. Because if they've been seeking public office or holding public office or working for the federal government over the past 5 decades and have spent a great deal of time alienating key constituencies during that period of time, does anybody seriously believe that they can win statewide in a competitive state like Colorado, particularly with the demographic changes we're having are going on in the state?
Right.
I mean, I really think it's one thing to like somebody and to kind of be amused by them and to think, oh, they're really good and they're funny and, you know, and even honor them for their previous service. But if the intention is to win an election, I think Republicans have got to really take this seriously and make a decision on who can win, because they and that's not because they suddenly become overnight liberals or something.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne Howard was and Bill Nolens were two of the most conservative legislators when they ran for statewide office, and yet they could articulate their conservative agenda in a very open and welcoming way for all Coloradans to consider. We don't need Republicans who alienate large blocks of voters. And so I don't know who those candidates are right now, but I know this, that Colorado Republicans are going to continue to lose statewide elections if they continue to nominate candidates that don't have the discipline and the foresight and the substance of people like Allard and Owens and Armstrong and Brown. That's what I do know.
Right. And I agree with that. What do you think about Scott Gessler? He won a statewide election. However, the Post and Colorado
mm-hmm.
Ethics Watch have been brutal on him.
Yeah. Scott is a great friend. And he's done some great work as Secretary of State. That office used to really not be that controversial. But election law has become so politicized over the past 10 years that Scott has done some great work. I think it's difficult to start a campaign when you're dealing with those ethical assaults on him. But if Scott can get past him, if he can be exonerated in those of those charges against him, he'll emerge a strong candidate. But you're right. He's won statewide. You cannot take that away from Scott Gessler. He's smart. He's articulate. And he's a good guy.
Another one I hear his name being thrown around is Greg Brophy.
Greg Brophy is a really good guy.
Yeah. I've met him several times,
mm-hmm.
and he's
mm-hmm.
always approachable. You could talk to him. And, and his name's
Greg
out there because of the gun laws.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
that's
he's a farmer from Yuma County.
Right.
Who is kind of interesting because he rides his bike all over the state. He's an accomplished bicycle rider. He is he's smart. He's articulate. He was a very effective state senator. He's kind of the wild card. He's never run for statewide office. He's not very well known beyond his rural district.
Right.
Greg is certainly a credible candidate and would be a great governor. So I think we're going to see others jump in this thing. I mean, I don't think the field is set. We'll see what happens. And maybe the nominee will come from the three we've talked about, but we'll see what happens.
Okay, now for U.S. Senate, do you see
mm-hmm.
Bob Beaupre even considering to run for U.S.
I assume
Senate?
Bob will think about it.
Okay.
I assume he will. I mean, I know there's a young state senator by the name of Owen Hill from Colorado Springs is considering
yeah,
it. I've heard rumors that Susan Beckman, the former Arapahoe County Commissioner, is considering it. I mean, I think there's several people who will also jump into the excuse me, Art, I've got a cold and I'm kind of coughing.
Oh.
I think there will be the same thing. I think there will be a lot of competition. And
right.
I always think competition is good for nominations. I think that
I think
brings
so
up.
Too.
So we'll see what happens there.
Another name I just saw on Facebook that Scott Renfro
mm-hmm.
just threw his hat in the ring.
For U.S. Senator?
Right.
Oh, okay. Bill Scott has been a very respected senator from Weld County the last 6 years. You know, that's the thing. I mean, these nominations are totally open. I mean, if there's a year for somebody to just to jump in and compete, this is it. I mean, it's even more open, wide open than 2010 in many ways. And I think that there's the potential for a really great Republican year. So I think you'll find a lot of people interested in running.
And how about for Attorney General? Mark Waller has thrown his hat in the ring. There's Cynthia Kaufman and a couple other names have escaped me. But
well, you've got three right now, possibly Ken Buck. You mentioned Cynthia Kaufman, a really respected attorney. She was legal counsel to Owens. When he was governor, she's now the assistant attorney general, widely respected attorney. And then Mark Waller, who I think did a great job as minority leader of the House Republicans. Ken Buck, who even though he lost that Senate race, has always been a really highly respected Weld County district attorney. There could be others. So that's going to be a very competitive situation as well.
Yeah, I think so. I was at Ken's party last to celebrate that he is cancer-free, and that's just great news.
Yeah. It really is. He's a great guy.
I got to walk with him at the Martin Luther King parade last year.
Oh, that's great.
Boy, I had sore shoulders after that, just riding down Colfax on my skateboard.
I bet so, Arthur. Well, I'm probably going to need to leave here because I'm actually with my wife in North Carolina, and her father is very ill, and I kind of need to get back to her in that situation. But I really really enjoyed talking to you and talking about some of the candidates and what we need to do to win.
All right. Well, thank you for taking your time and calling in, and you're always welcome to jump in anytime if you hear the show and you have a comment. Give us a ring, all right?
Okay, Art. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay. Have a great day.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. That was Dick Wadhams, former Colorado State GOP chairman, giving us a big scoop, and boy, that's a lot of information there. We covered quite a bit of ground. Very, very interesting. I'd like to sit down with him someday and just pick his brain, and maybe he could give me some pointers on my next election so that I could pull out a win and help out the state here. All right, let's play a little bit of music, and we'll switch gears here, and we'll talk about some other hot topics going around the state, you know, such as there's the big brouhaha about the Obama administration using wiretaps on cellular phones, which is interesting. And then we'll also, and not only that, but they're doing data mining on our internet use, which that is interesting. So we'll talk about that when we get back. Let's play a little music here since, I want to play something a little different. I haven't played this song in a long time. This is by Christina Orbakaita, "Oh, My Love." All right, that's All My Love by Christina Orbakaita. She's a popular pop singer out of Russia, and this is one of her English songs that she sings, and I've gotten to like her music. All right, let's jump into our next topic here. We're going to talk about the eavesdropping, the wiretapping, the brouhaha over the government taking information from Verizon Wireless. Now, it turns out it's more than Verizon Wireless. It's other wireless companies. And this is nothing new. This has been going on since 2006 under the Bush administration. And what it is, it's data mining. And what they're trying to do is find patterns between callers from the United States to other parts of the world. And there are algorithms. I know the algorithms, everybody's saying algorithms this, algorithms that, but that's what they use. And they determine that if these phone calls hit a certain frequency or duration, that they get tagged, and then they'll go in and they'll get a court order and listen to the phone calls. And what it is, it's, you know, folks, this is just me. I have nothing to hide. If I'm going to call somebody overseas, it's not likely I'm calling a terrorist. So I know they're not going to be listening to me. Because now, for example, I want to give you an example. Okay. There are areas around the country where you have Muslim communities. And you know that they're going to make frequent calls back to their homeland or other Muslim countries. So probably what's happening is they're keeping track of the calls and durations to certain areas. And there are going to be certain levels where, okay, are there going to be calls going to certain countries that we know that have been very hot in terrorist activity? Or not even terrorist activity, but what if there's a civil war going on there? So that's going to send up some red flags. And if they deem that these people are contacting a terrorist group, or they're going to send them money or get money, then I think what will happen is the government will get a court order and they'll actually go and listen to the phone calls. And if they're just innocuous calls where they're saying, hello, brother, good to see you. How's the family? How's the little kids? And so forth and blah, blah, blah. However, if they say something like, have you spoken to the cleric? Or have you gotten the package yet? Or do you have a package for me? I mean, just some key words to where the government's going to go, this might be something we might need. But if you're just Joe Schmo and you're going to call your relatives in, say, Europe or South America or even the Asia, the Pacific, not likely that you'll have any problem there. However, and this is my concern, is with what's going on with this administration, especially in the light of the IRS scandal, that how do we know that this administration is not actually using these records to, I don't know, maybe spy on certain groups like, oh, I don't know, they have the words like Tea Party, Constitution, Patriot in their name. I mean, the IRS already has the phone numbers to those organizations. What would stop the Justice Department from listening into conversations between those groups and their donors and maybe some volunteers they're working for, so that they could feed that information to liberal groups like MoveOn.org or Tides Foundation or Ford Foundation or some group that could go and protest against these people. Now, I could be all wet about this. I could. But, hey, it's just a thought. And not only is it our phone conversations, but now it's also the internet. And it turns out that Yahoo, Google, AOL, and all these other companies are actually helping the government. Now, I can understand that if someone is out there and they want to learn how to make a bomb or something, all they have to do is go to YouTube, and there's always videos. But the bombs, I mean, those are pretty much firecrackers, my concern there. Yeah, they have some where they show you how to make rocket engines out of sugar and a few chemicals. It's not like that they're making thiocol and making these powerful solid rocket motors to launch a rocket hundreds or thousands of miles. But on YouTube, they'll show you how those are made. And those are from old film reels and old videos that have been around for years and years, and now they're posted on YouTube. So my concern is folks that are using the internet to kind of search out groups or get into groups or joining a group, you know, like for example, the Arapaho County Tea Party. Would someone like the Obama administration be interested in finding out who is going to those websites and who the members are? That's interesting. And because then you have liberal groups that might go out and attack those people. I mean, not physically attack, but intimidate those people. I mean, you could go on Facebook and you could join a group. And I've joined many, many different groups here in Colorado that are of the right-of-center variety of groups. And here is my problem, is we've written up this law basically to help the two intelligence communities to work together to share information. You have the FBI and the CIA, which I totally agree. It was necessary. But with all the scandals that are going on, it really makes me wonder about how that power could be misused to manipulate elections. And to intimidate groups. I mean, look at the IRS has upheld, stalled, and even intimidated people who've been trying to get their 503s and C4 standings for tax purposes. But Barack Obama's brother, he gets his own 501c4, and he's a big swindler. But he got his just like right away. And here's something that is interesting about how the timeline happened about this. And this was pointed out by Mike Rosen on his talk show yesterday, that if you listen to the speeches that Obama has given since 2010, where he talks about the Tea Party movement, the conservative group, grassroots movement, it coincides with exactly when the IRS started targeting those groups. Now, I'm not saying that Barack Obama actually told the IRS to do this, because he already installed people in those positions that he didn't have to ask them to do this. It was implicit. It was understood by those people working for the IRS. You've got left-leaning people working at the IRS, and naturally they're going to say, you know what, we need to start looking at these right-wing radical groups like the Tea Party and patriot groups, because we can't stand by and let them get their tax-exempt status. We're going to make them work hard. But all these left-wing groups, they go in and boom, they sail right through the process and get their tax-exempt status. Now, I explained what the difference between a C4 and a C3. A C4 is for education and community help. There were a C4 or C3 is more for getting the word out on an issue. Neither one could endorse a candidate or an issue, but they could go around that by saying, here's what we believe in, and this is why we believe in this strongly, and that's how they influence people. Now, you got groups out there that want to take the money out of politics. And it's usually from the left, because what they want to do is they say, well, we don't want corporations and special interests. Well, what about unions? They're special interests. Yet they get preferential treatment. But now with the Citizens United case, which overturned that, it puts us on an equal footing with unions. And what people don't understand is that money is free speech, because that is how you get paid for your advertising. And what it is, it's a group of people that get together that are of like mind, you know, like, for example, the NRA. You got people who believe in the Second Amendment, and they donate to the NRA and to other gun rights groups. Like, for example, I just got my membership card yesterday from Rocky Mountain Gun Owners. So now I'm a card-carrying member of Rocky Mountain Gun Owners. And what they do is they support candidates that support Second Amendment rights. And it's the same thing on the other side, on the left side. You know, there are some groups that organize and they contribute to candidates that follow their ideals and their beliefs. I mean, look at AARP. They take the money from people who join their group, and they sided with the Obama administration on Obamacare. Well, why? Because they stand to get a huge windfall from Obamacare. And that's why they support. So every time you put restrictions on how much money certain groups can get, there's always going to be a way around it. So why not, you know, for state elections, make it unlimited? And also the beauty about the 501c3s and c4s is those people don't have to disclose who their donors are. That's the beauty about that. To where I could be wrong on that, so all right, I'll step away from that. But this is the thing about what's going on with the IRS. Demanding to know who the donors are. What I'd like to see is anybody could give any amount of money and be anonymous. That's just an idea. I'm not saying I would vote for something like this in the Senate, but what it would do, it would protect people that own businesses and corporations from being boycotted by liberal groups. I mean, you rarely see right-wing groups do the same thing, because they're all about individualism and freedom of speech. I mean, these people are just too busy actually working, doing a job, where liberals, you know, that's their hobby, is protesting. So I think that campaign contributions, they equal free speech. Whether it's an individual or a group of people. But this whole thing about, oh, corporations are taking over the political scene. And corporation, it's an epithet. It's like doo-doo head. Which I like the way Mike Rosen uses that. And it's spot on. And I think that what it's really about, corporation, means public and private enterprise. And they don't like that. And then where money equals free speech. You have all kinds of organizations that work on the behalf of the poor and indigent. So there is not a problem there. You got plenty. And then you have some very, very wealthy left-wingers that could personally bankroll it themselves. So we come back to free speech and I look at the whole Patriot Act, and on 9/11, the country changed. We had people that don't belong to a government, but belong to an ideology that wants to kill us, that wants to take over the world. They want Sharia law across. I'm not saying that. And this is maybe only 10 to 25% of the Muslim world. But they are so brutal that they scare the moderates. And that's how they get their control. But that's getting off on another tangent. And what I want to point out is our view of the world totally changed on that day to where we went from having nations fighting nations in organized groups. Now we have what's called asymmetric warfare, where you have groups that don't belong to a country or to a government, but belong to an ideology that wants to take over the world. So, and they don't fight honorably. They're not honorable fighters. They hide behind women and children. And sometimes they even use women and children as bombs. And what really disturbed me is a few times they actually used mentally challenged people as human bombs. And being a disabled person myself, that really bothers me when you have a group of people that would use a person with a disability to kill somebody else for an ideology. And then we find out there was a wall between the FBI and the CIA. They couldn't share information. Well, this broke down that wall to where So people were getting a little, and I'm not saying a little paranoia is bad, but let's keep it in perspective. Let's think about why we got here. And remember that when George Bush was doing this, the media was just going gangbusters and, this is terrible, civil liberties. And now that Obama's doing it, it's like, no big deal. So what? You know, he's just trying to protect, just trying to save human life. So come on, let's be real about this. Let's get the perspective back. And there's a whole lot that has to be done to shift things back to the right, of center. And it's going to be a big, big challenge. So what are your thoughts? If you have a comment, a question, call in at 1-877-627-5071. I know the guys at Colorado Polls, they're listening to this show, and they're writing down, well, gee, how can we misquote this Dick Wadhams? Oh, he said this, and blah, blah, blah. Oh, that R. Carlson. Oh, wow, he's a radical. We need to really blah, 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 blah. And at Colorado Polls, what you don't know who the authors are because they used a screen name, a handle. And some of the stuff that comes out of Colorado Polls, it's just like junior high, snarky, just utter drivel that comes out of that. And I've been a target of them, and I look at it, and I just giggle. I'm like, is that all you got? Okay, whatever. You want to attack me because, wow, he was a comedian. Hey, look at Al Franken. That guy was a comedian, and he actually stole an election. And then they poke fun at this radio show, and just because I'm getting a right of center view out there, and it's about darn time that we start making a dent in the media and start getting our side out there. And little by little, we're chipping away. I mean, we're making great strides on cable. We got the number one cable news show, and that's Fox. I remember when CNN was king, and now they're just barely inching along. And MSNBC, oh my God, they're only getting something like 300,000 to 500,000 viewers a day. I mean, SpongeBob SquarePants gets higher ratings than MSNBC out there. And all these left-wing radio shows, like Air America, I like to call it Scare America, they failed. They just could not compete in the marketplace. I think part of it is because it's angry. You know, I think after a while when people hear nothing but anger and hatefulness. People just get numb and they just don't want to listen to that. To where if you listen, and you know what, on the right side, on conservative, you're going to have a different gradient amongst the different talk shows. You have Michael Savage, who is very extreme, and then you have, going left of that, you have, oh, maybe Bill O'Reilly is probably the closest to right of center. And you have people in between, such as Laura Ingraham, Dennis Prager, Hugh Hewitt, and so forth. And Mike Rosen here in Denver, Steve Kelly, and the list goes on. So I've been bloviating for quite a while, and I think we're going to let's have another song here. All right, here, how about Cross Your Heart by Dick and the Chicks?
Somewhere this very minute, there's a boy that's gonna live his dreams. Tonight, the flash of the gun, it sees it up on the silver screen. Do you cross your heart and your hope to die?
I know I do. Hey, that was Dick and the Chicks, a local band here in Denver, Colorado. They do a fine job. All right, how about on to something a little unusual here. Let's talk about this guy. He's a deadbeat dad, has 22 kids with 14 women. He's being sued for child support. Tennessee pays $7,000 per month. I was young and ambitious. Yeah, and horny too, I think. This is by Kristen Butler, UPI, Orlando Shaw, Guess he fathered 18 children with 17 women, but really has 22 children with 14 women, making him the most expensive deadbeat dad in Tennessee history. Shaw appeared in court in Nashville when Child Support Services sued on behalf of the mothers for tens of thousands of dollars in unpaid child support over the years. I was young and ambitious, and I love women, Shaw, 33, told WTVF-TV. He said that when he was young, he wanted 50 kids, but he's ready to get fixed now. Shaw said he's proud of all his children, who range from infancy to 18, and is happy his large family will carry the Shaw name for years and years to come. The state is estimated to be paying more than $7,000 each month to help support all of Shaw's children. How do we apply our child support guidelines to this many children in this many households? Asked Magistrate Scott Rosenberg. Rosenberg said it would take 3 or 4 full-time jobs to even come close to paying the child support Shaw owes. Shaw will likely go on trial on the case, could receive jail time. But Shaw has been in jail before and says his criminal history is what makes it difficult to find a job. And there you have it. I could sum it up in 2 words. Actually, 3 words. War on poverty. This is what we have from the Johnson administration. This is what we get when we have entitlements that are running amok out there. It has destroyed the black family unit. Where in 1963, the out-of-wedlock birth for black families was something like 22%. Now it's 75%. I mean, you just don't have a father that's in the household to be that cohesive glue that holds the family together, to show the young men that you are responsible for your actions. And when it just outrageous what is going on out there and how the family unit has it's just fallen apart. And it's hurting the black community. Also in the news, we have Vladimir Putin is divorcing his wife of 29 years, Ludmila Putina. It turns out he had an affair with the younger women. And I like Jay Leno's quote where Putin has been Putin in the wrong place at the wrong Putin time. Something like that. All right, let's switch gears here. I think it's time for a little mirth here. A little humor goes a long way. And this is an email that I got. This is many, many years ago, and I think it still applies today. This is tech support on new husbands. Dear tech support, last year I upgraded from boyfriend 5.0 to husband 1.0 and noticed that the new program began making unexpected changes to the accounting software, severely limiting access to wardrobe, flower, and jewelry applications that operated flawlessly under boyfriend 5.0. No mention of this phenomenon was included in the product brochure. In addition, Husband 1.0 uninstalls many other valuable programs such as Dinner Dancing 7.5, Cruise Ship 2.3, and Opera Night 6.1, and installs new undesirable programs such as Poker Night 1.3, Saturday Football 5.0, Golf 2.4, and Clutter Everywhere 4.5. Conversation 8.0 no longer runs and invariably crashes the system. Under no circumstances will it run diaper changing 14.1 or house cleaning 2.6. I've tried running Nagging 5.3 to fix Husband 1.0, but this all-purpose utility is of limited effectiveness. Can you help, please? Dear Jane, this is a very common problem women complain about, but it's mostly due to the primary misconception many people upgrade from boyfriend 5.0 to husband 1.0 with no idea excuse me that boyfriend 5.0 is merely an entertainment package. However, husband 1.0 is an operating system and was designed by its creator to run as few applications as possible. Further, you cannot purge husband 1.0 and return to boyfriend 5.0 because husband 1.0 is not designed to do this hidden operating file within your system, which caused boyfriend 5.0 to emulate husband 1.0, so nothing is gained. It is impossible to uninstall, delete, or purge the program files from the system once installed. Any new program files can only be installed once per year, as Husband 1.0 has severely limited memory. Error messages are common and a normal part of Husband 1.0. In desperation to play some of their old-time favorite applications or to get new applications to work, some women have tried to install boyfriend 6.0 or husband 2.0. However, these women end up with more problems than encountered with husband 1.0. Look in your manual under warnings, divorce/child support. You will notice that this program runs very poorly and comes bundled with Heartbreak 0.3. I recommend you keep husband 1.0 and just learn the quirks of the strange and illogical system. Having Husband 1.0 installed myself, I might also suggest you read the entire section regarding general partnership faults, or GPFs. This is a wonderful feature of Husband 1.0, secretly installed by the parent company as an integral part of the operating system. Husband 1.0 must assume that all responsibility for all faults and promises, regardless of root cause. To activate this great feature, enter command C:// I thought you loved me. Sometimes tiers 6.2 must be run simultaneously while entering the command. Husband 1.0 should then run the application apologize 12.3 and flowers/chocolates 7.8. Tech tip: avoid excessive use of this feature. Overuse can create additional and more serious GPFs, and ultimately, you may have to give a C:// I apologize command before the system will return to normal operation. Overuse can also cause Husband 1.0 to default to Grumpy Silence 2.5, or worse yet, to Beer 6.0. Beer 6.0 is a very bad program that causes Husband 1.0 to create a flat belly files and snoring loudly wave files that are very hard to delete. Save yourself some trouble by following this tech tip. Just remember, the system will run smoothly and take the blame for all the GPFs. But because of this fine feature, it can only intermittently run all the applications of Boyfriend 5.0 RAM. Husband 1.0 is a great program, but it does have limited memory, cannot learn new applications quickly. Consider buying additional software to improve performance. I personally recommend Hot Food 3.0, Lingerie 5.3, and Patience 10.1. Used in conjunction, these utilities can really help keep Husband 1.0 running smoothly. After several years of use, Husband 1.0 will become familiar, and you will find many valuable embedded features such as Fix Broken Things 2.1, Snuggling 4.2, and Best Friend 7.6. A final word of caution: do not, under any circumstances, install Mother-in-Law 1.0. This is not a supported application and will cause selective shutdown of the operating system. Husband 1.0 will run only Fishing 9.4 and Hunting 5.2 until Mother-in-Law 1.0 is uninstalled. I hope these notes have helped. Thank you for choosing to install Husband 1.0, and we are here at the Tech Support, wish you best of luck in the coming years. We trust you will learn to fully enjoy this product. And that is Tech Tips on New Husband. And it's funny, and you really think about it, it's like, yeah, that really makes sense. Now, they just had a program for girlfriend or wife. Boy, I hate to see what that operating system looks like. I'm still stuck on dating 6.0 and usually leads to crying and disappointment 10.0. Well, not just me. All right, let's play some more music. Here's some music that I think you'll like. This is I Know by Abram Russo. It's a nice little, well, if you're in a relationship or getting into one, this is for you. I Know by Abram Russo, another popular Russian singer who is actually from Syria. He speaks 5 different languages and sings in 5 different languages. So he's very popular in Europe and the Middle East. So I hope you enjoyed that. So anyway, let's get back to some of the important issues. We were talking about this program, and it claims that Obama claims nobody is listening to your phone calls. And this is Operation Prism. And Operation Prism, it started way, way back in 2007. And it cost something like $20 million per year. Now, you know, that's actually a drop in the bucket if you really think about But here are some of the companies that are working with the government. There's Microsoft, there's Yahoo, Google, Facebook, PalTalk, YouTube, Skype, AOL, and now, just recently, Apple. And this is from UPI and The Guardian. And we'll just read here. Washington, June 7th. U.S. President Barack Obama, speaking Friday about monitoring of electronic communication, said the government is not listening to your telephone calls. The president's statement came after news that espionage targeted by foreigners included Google and Facebook use and credit card transactions. Obama said monitoring of U.S. citizens is limited to what has been authorized by Congress. Nobody is listening to your telephone calls, he said. That is not what the program's about. That was indicated. What the intelligence community is doing is looking at phone numbers and durations of calls. Okay. Obama stressed any further surveillance, including monitor of content of phone calls, would require authorization by a judge. That's exactly what I said earlier. Officials stressed that all the spying foreign and domestic seeks to target and weed out enemy national security threats and is authorized under U.S. surveillance law, the officials stressed. The top secret online spying, codenamed PRISM, has been going on for 6 years, officials said. Besides Google Inc. and Facebook Inc., it includes the customer information taken from Yahoo Inc., Microsoft Corp., PalTalk, Instant Messaging, AOL Inc., Skype Broadband Phone Service, YouTube LLC, and Apple Inc. Records first reported by the Washington Post and British newspaper The Guardian indicated Washington acknowledged PRISM spying after newspapers reporting about it online late Thursday. The newspaper cited an internal 41-slide power presentation for the Defense Department's National Security Agent, a giant global spying operation based at Fort Meade, Maryland, and nicknamed no such agency because of its ultra secrecy. PowerPoint slides, which the Guardian said were apparently used to train intelligent operatives on the PRISM's spying program capabilities, said the program runs since 2007, has provided NSA and FBI with contents of email, stored data, file transfers, live chats, video conferencing, videos, photos, and logins. PRISM lets the agency get the information directly from the servers of the service providers, the slide said. The NSA established similar relationship with credit card companies to get purchase information from. Three former officials told the Wall Street Journal in an online report Thursday night. The U.S. officials acknowledged that PRISM spying hours after they acknowledged a separate 7-year effort to sweep up records of phone calls made inside the United States between domestic U.S. locations and anywhere else in the world. Phone call spying of call detail records goes beyond the spying initially reported through Verizon Communications Inc., included call data from AT&T and Nextel Corporation to other U.S. phone networks, the journal said. The arrangement means whenever most Americans make a call, the NSA gets a record of the caller and the recipient location, the number dialed, the time called, and the conversation, like the journal said. The program, which evolved out of warrantless wiretapping program begun by George W. Bush administration after September 11, 2001, terrorist attack, is approved by the government's executive, legislative, and judicial branches, officials said. Phone calls spying reauthorized by secret U.S. Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court is to end July 19th unless authorized again. Court surveillance warrant indicates the court established by 1978's Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act oversees government requests for surveillance warrants against suspected foreign intelligence agents inside the United States. It was not clear if the internet or credit card arrangements are continuing or were only a one-time only collection efforts, the journal said. Major credit card and phone companies declined to comment. Verizon General Counsel said in a memo to employees, company takes steps to safeguard its customers' privacy, but must turn over information when ordered by federal court. Several internet companies issued statements strongly denying acknowledging or participation in the program. Among the statements, Google said, Google cares deeply about the security of our users' data. We disclose our users' data to government in accordance with the law, and we review all such requests carefully. From time to time, people allege that we have created a government backdoor into our system. But Google does not have a backdoor for government to access private user data. An Apple spokesman said the company never heard of PRISM. We do not provide any government agency with direct access to our servers. And any government agency requesting customer data must get a court order, spokesman Steve Dowling said. National Intelligence Director James Clapper defended the phone data surveillance program, saying it is governed by a robust legal regime. In a separate statement Thursday night, he assailed those who leaked the information to a news organization. Information collected under this program is the most important and valuable foreign intelligence information we collect and is used to protect our nation from a wide variety of threats, Clapper's statement said. The unauthorized disclosure of information about this important, entirely legal program is reprehensible and risks important protections for the security of Americans, it said. Other government agencies declined to comment about the disclosures. Everyone should calm down and understand this is anything brand new, said Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat, Nevada. He told reporters the phone data program worked to prevent terrorist attack without offering details. Senate Intelligence Chairman Dianne Feinstein, Democrat, California, said the program was lawful and must be renewed by Congress every 3 months. Senate Intelligence Committee member Ron Wyden, Democrat, Oregon, said when a law-abiding American calls their friends, who they call, when they call, where they call from is private information. collecting this data about every single phone call that every American makes every day would be a massive invasion of Americans' privacy. And there you have it. However, this is my contention, is in the light of what has happened with the IRS, how do we know they're not nefariously using this data to track those in the Tea Party, the Patriot Movement? I mean, these small right-wing grassroots movements. I mean, it's just scary what can happen. It could be a slippery slope, I admit. But however, we do need to have safeguards so that we can keep tabs on people who will do us harm. And that's how I feel. All right, so we're coming down the bat stretch here. We've got about a little less than 25 minutes. Let's play a few more tunes here. How about, since I'm in a patriotic kind of mood, here's something by Madison Rising, "In the Days That Reagan Ruled."
Show we could celebrate. Americans, never forget your heroic origins. Never fail to seek divine guidance. And never lose your natural God-given optimism. And finally, my fellow Americans, may every dawn be a great new beginning for America, and every evening bring us closer to that shining city upon a hill. Goodbye, and God bless each and every one of you, and God bless this country we love.
Wow. I mean, great song. Probably the greatest president that we had in the 20th century, who defeated the communists without firing a shot. And he took a terrible economy and gave us something like 20 years of excellent growth. And now we're almost back in that same position where we're, I mean, it started off, it was just terrible. It was just horrible. The economy was bad. And then, yeah, we're moving along, but God, we're just moving forward painfully slow. Oh, and on top of that, even with the good news on unemployment, the unemployment numbers went up. It went from 7.5 to 7.6. That's because more people are looking for work. If you counted all the people that dropped out and stopped looking for work, I think our unemployment is closer to 10%. Now, while I was talking to Dick Wadhams, we were talking about Ken Buck. Last week, I went to his home up in Windsor. And they were celebrating that he is cancer-free. He had stage 4 lymphoma. That's pretty bad. And He bounced back. He beat it. He looked good. He looked a little thinner. He's bald, but hey, that's part of the chemotherapy treatment. And it was just great to see him doing so well. And I hope he does consider running for Attorney General. I think he would make a terrific Attorney General. I just don't want to see Don Quick be Attorney General. It'll be more of the same that we had under Salazar. And Salazar, I don't need to go through that again. But while I was up there, there were several familiar faces that I knew up there, several state representatives and some media people from the right side and some people who've worked on campaigns. So it was a really, really nice party, and they had the best beer I ever had. And folks, I'm not a beer drinker, and they had this stuff that's called Grimm's Brother, and it's brewed right out of Windsor, Colorado. However, it is found in a lot of the liquor stores around the Denver metro area. And since I live in Golden, Colorado, they happen to have it over here at Applejack Liquors. Unfortunately, you can only buy it by the bottle. But they're the big bottles. They're like the, 24-ounce bottles. So I bought one of each so that I could, you know, find out which one it was that I had. And I really don't like the real hoppy flavored beer. I like the beer that is smooth and it goes down, doesn't leave an aftertaste. And it kind of had a sweet fruity taste, which I liked. Just a little hint. It was just really good. And I'm like going, wow, that's beer. That goes down really good. So to cap it off, coming down from Windsor, you know, way out, it's just east of Loveland. So on the way back, I have a friend who owns a rock club in Thornton, Colorado. So I stopped by and see the owner. Well, she wasn't there, and it was a really, really slow night. So I didn't sit at my usual spot. I just sat at the end of the bar on the other side of the room. And the bartender just said, hey, why don't you come on down and sit in your spot over here? I said, okay. So moved over there. And the bartender, she is hot. She's a buxom blonde knockout. So we just start talking, and I had my cell phone with me, so I was able to show her some pictures that I had on Facebook, because I just had some photos taken from my campaign, and I was showing her those, and I had some old photos of me when I was about 9 or 10 years old, and then some of my headshots that I had when I was a comedian back 25 years ago. And we just started chatting, and I got her phone number. And she asked me out. I'm like, so when it was closing time, or it was just getting really close to, they were cleaning up and it was almost time to leave anyway. So she walked me out to my car. I'm like, well, you can't beat that. How cool is that? So I had a great night, and I'll be going up there again tonight, and I'll see her and Nicole, who owns the club, and we'll have some fun. So, alrighty, so let's play something a little different here. I think I'm in the mood for, how about Running to You by Dick and the Chicks? You'll enjoy this one.
Inside my mind, you
All right, that's Running to You by Dick and the Chicks. So I'm going to go up and check out the club. Haven't set anything with this person. I'm not going to mention her name because I want to respect her privacy. And she has kids. I know that. I know she's been at least married once, maybe twice. I don't know. This is the thing about meeting somebody new, getting to know them, seeing where they come from. See, I know she's a Republican, so that can't be all bad. That's good to know. But, it all comes down to how you feel and how, if you have that feeling, can you, it's all about trust. If you can trust somebody that they're going to be straight up with. I'm 53 years old. This gal's only 41. And I'm still flabbergasted. This beautiful woman. And I wasn't even trying to get her number. It's like, just this whole year has been like that. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because, these 40-year-old women are just looking for somebody that's, stable, that has ambition, that has drive, that wants to do something with this life and move on. So maybe that's what it's about. I don't know. I've been out with several women, and I know it sounds like, there goes Artie's tooting his horn, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, hey, fellas, ladies and gentlemen, when you're only 4'6", and all of a sudden women are interested in you, you gotta, perk your head up and say, and what it comes down to is just being yourself and just don't try to force. Here I am, this is a political talk show, and I'm off on relationships. And it just comes down to being yourself. And I think that's what attracts people to you. And, sometimes you'll meet some really cool people out there, and sometimes you'll just meet some crazies out there that just drive you nuts, and you just have to decide, all right, this is time to move on and deal with just so. In my teens, 20s, 30s, I'm always going to the bars and, hey, how you doing? Hey, what you like to go out sometime? Here's my number. And, this is before cell phones and stuff, and you get answering machines. I mean, you still get answering machines, but now they're called voicemail. You got cell phones, but, not too bad. Then you got texting, which is pretty cool. And you got all different ways of communicating with more people. And I think it just opens up your the possibilities of meeting more people, whether it's finding a mate or just making new friends or building on your networking. Which is what I've been doing with my campaigning, my life. This is what I do. This is what I'm interested in. And I'm concerned about what's going on with the state, and I want to be part of it. And I want to actually do something. Because I don't want to be on the sidelines anymore. I want to get in and get my hands dirty and make the sausage coming out of the Capitol. And hopefully the sausage I make is something that's palatable, that people want. And it seems like the sausage that's come out of this last legislation has just been nothing but filled with byproducts and fat. It's garbage is what came out of this. Now, I'm not saying civil unions is garbage. You know what? I'm all with that. It's just this other stuff about overreaching gun laws and enforcing rural areas to mandate that they have more renewable energy, which is going to make their electric rates go through the roof. So I want to thank you folks for listening to this show. And I hope you come back next week. We're going to have more guests, and I want to keep improving on this show. And who knows, maybe some more down the road, this will really take off. I want to say God bless America, and God bless this great state of Colorado. See you next week. Bye-bye.